The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of The Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber National Conference and Expo. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the program, Afternoons with Mike. It's always a pleasure to introduce new people to our Shepherd Studio, and that's exactly what I'm able to do today. I have two guests in the studio today, and they're both involved with an organization that I just love. In fact, we've had Vicki Matthews on a number of times. We've had Choices represented not only through Vicki, but recently you guys opened up a new clinic at the UCF area. And I have the director of that clinic, plus the director of the downtown clinic with me. I have Christina Bishop, who is the new clinic director at UCF, and Michelle Sawney, the clinic director of Choices Downtown, right here in the Shepherd Studios. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's really great to have you. And I know this is a really fun thing to get two directors of an organization like what I know Choices is. And I'm looking forward to hearing both of your stories, if I could. And then the other thing that I would love to for us to bring all of our listeners up to date on is the fact that you've got a big fundraising banquet coming up just in a couple of days, and that's going to be featuring Hercules, Kevin Sorbo.
Exactly. Hercules will be there.
Yes.
We had a lot of listeners just fell right out right there. Whoa, who? It's Kevin Sorbo. It's going to be the guest speaker at that event, and that couldn't be more exciting. But let's begin with you, if I can, Michelle. You've been the director of the campus that's been around for a while.
Yes.
And if you can, tell us a little bit about, first of all, you, where you grew up, how you came to know the Lord, and then ultimately how you got involved with Choices.
Absolutely. Well, I grew up, I'm one of what you may call a native Floridian.
No.
Born and raised, been here my whole life, Central Florida. At that, I was born in Orlando, raised in Orlando, and I love the weather. I mean, there's no better place to me than where you get sunshine pretty much every day and warm weather pretty much almost year round. So I saw no reason to leave.
Where did you go to school?
I went to UCF. So mm-hmm. I'm actually a UCF graduate, UCF alum, Knights alum.
It's changed a lot, I would imagine, since the day you went to school.
Yes. Believe it or not, I graduated about 20 years ago. So
I don't believe it. it looks like you graduated a year ago. I mean, it's not fair.
Thank you.
That's amazing. But 20 years ago.
20 years ago.
Yeah. It would be a lot different campus back then.
Yes. It was very different, a lot smaller. Now the second largest university in the United States, and it was pretty large back then, so I can't imagine walking that campus now and just how many students and buildings and faculty and staff. It's a quite impressive campus right now.
Yeah, I think, if I'm not mistaken, it might be the largest in Florida, right?
The largest in Florida, yes.
Yeah, and the second largest. What would be the one school that's bigger?
I'm not sure.
I wouldn't know either.
Stop me there.
Yeah, but it's a huge campus. It's like you said,
yeah.
And they have made so many, I guess you could say, acquisitions of new properties, new buildings, the stadium itself. I moved back in 19 from Gainesville. I had lived in Gainesville for 17 years. My wife and I moved back, and the first time I was on the UCF campus after being gone all those years, I could not believe that was UCF campus. It didn't look anything like what I remembered it looking like.
No, it's been quite developed. It's beautiful, state of the art. It was always very large. The buildings were always very far apart. So I remember walking that campus from class to class and praying, God, let me get to my class on time. Now I think most students probably drive, you know, from one area of the campus to the next, because
it's massive.
It's just, I mean, probably quadrupled in size. Mm-hmm. So that was always, since I've been at Choices now for over 4 years, that was a coveted area that we wanted to be near because of just the amount of students and how large that campus is and the impact we can have on that side of town.
Now, growing up here in the Central Florida area, were your parents believers?
My parents, I grew up Catholic. So my parents were Catholic. My mom had converted later when I was about in high school to Christianity and mm-hmm. got saved. And I, growing up Catholic and going to Catholic school and church, I was like, what's going on? She's going in water and getting baptized. What is this about? Yeah. I thought you did that just as a baby, you know, mm-hmm. the Catholic
right,
faith.
Right.
But it always intrigued me because I saw the difference in who she was versus when she was, you know, practicing Catholic, her whole spirit, her whole just parenting and, you know, just everything about her had changed. I saw it in her personality and there was something different in her when she gave her life to Christ. And so it intrigued me, but I, of course, was, you know, a typical teenager that wanted to do what she wanted to do.
You were watching, but not yet sold into that direction yourself.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. And so it wasn't until shortly after I graduated college that I became a believer. And what drew me to Christ was I found myself in an unplanned pregnancy. And about 2 years after I graduated college, I had my son. And that was a really hard time in my life because I didn't have the support of his father. And I had to make that tough decision to be a single mom and going into this pregnancy knowing that that was going to be my reality, where that was just the farthest thing from what I wanted to do because I grew up in a two-parent home. My parents have been married for over 50 mm-hmm. years. And so it was really scary for me to know that that's where I'd be. And so it was shortly after I had my son that I found myself seeking now this God that my mom came to know and that changed her life and gave her peace and gave her hope.
Mm-hmm.
And here I was in a situation where I needed that. And God brought me right to him. I started attending a church and I gave my life to Christ about 2 years after I had my son.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yes.
And how old is he now?
He is 15.
Wow. So you're full-fledged into the teen years.
And yes.
That's an adventure in and of itself, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I mean, I need God just as much, if not more, than when he was a toddler.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what, we had four, and my youngest turns 30 this year.
Oh.
And we just got word that my ninth grandchild is going to be a boy.
So, congratulations.
And my oldest grandchild is 20. So I know you're shocked. I know you're surprised. Yeah, right. No, it's really hard to believe. I've got nine of them on the way.
Wow.
But that's really, congratulations on your 15-year-old. That's wonderful.
Thank you. He's the light of my life. And mm-hmm. I thank God for him every day. And I remember that moment where I was, you know, considering abortion when I was pregnant with him. I had actually made a decision when I was in college and had an abortion. So I didn't want to go that route. I told myself I would never want to do that again. But here I was now in an unplanned pregnancy again.
Mm-hmm.
And having that hard decision to make again, you know, do I want to do this at such a young age? And I felt God just completely, you know, steer me in the direction to trust him, to have my son. And it's been by far the best decision I've ever made.
Now, you mentioned that, and I really appreciate the candor of your heart and that experience that you had when you, the first time,
mm-hmm.
when it did end in abortion.
Yes.
Can you talk about that? Because a lot of people would like to paint this out. And as a pastor, I was a pastor for 36 years, and I never counseled any lady that ever had an abortion that was really happy about it or felt okay about it. I mean, it was just the opposite. How was that experience immediately afterwards for you?
Well, immediately after, which I can, you know, I can understand from a lot of our patients' perspective is that, you know, that fear that you feel when you find out you're pregnant and it's not the right time, all you want is for that to go away. And you want that relief and you want that to be lifted and taken away. And
mm-hmm.
so that immediate feeling after you have an abortion is a sense of relief because you're no longer in this fearful situation.
Right.
But you're not realizing that you made that decision in such a high state of fear and not knowing fully how that's going to impact you and not knowing fully without taking time to think and talk it through, is this really the best decision? And so shortly after that relief you know, after having that abortion, now you start to process those kind of thoughts and emotions. Did I make the right choice? Could I have, you know, chosen a different path? What would that have looked like? And so that started to come and play in my life shortly after I had my abortion.
How long afterwards?
I would say it was pretty quick. I remember the day after I had the abortion, I remember just that automatic feeling of shame, an automatic feeling of guilt, not wanting to tell anybody. I remember saying to myself, God, like, you know, if I die or something happens to me, then I deserve it. You know, I mean, it was immediate. I wasn't a Christian. I wasn't saved at that point, but right. I knew enough. I knew God enough to know that this was wrong and that he was not pleased with that decision, and that shame and that guilt started to flood. And so it just, you know, as a young woman, I was in college, you immediately try to just get busy and stop thinking about it and numb those feelings because they start playing over and over in your head and your heart. And so that's what I did for about a year until I was confronted with it and I had to face it.
Did you take any type of like counseling or anything at all like that afterwards?
No, I didn't. I didn't even want to talk about it. I didn't want to tell anybody about it. I didn't want to share it with anybody, not even someone that I thought, you know, would be able to help me because I knew I needed help. But just that shame, that overwhelming feeling of shame and just kind of acting as if it never happened.
What was the difference maker? What caused you or what event happened that made you be able to break through that?
It wasn't until about a year and a half later that when I got pregnant with my son and I was contemplating abortion again. And I remember going to my doctor shortly in my pregnancy, very early on, while I was still contemplating that because of the situation that I was in. And I had an ultrasound at my doctor's office and I saw that my son had a heartbeat at six. I think I was 6 or 7 weeks at the time. And that's what really floored me, was that I didn't realize that, it, you know, this child had a heartbeat so early. And that's when I immediately was like, I'm keeping this baby. There is no way I'm stopping that heartbeat. And that's when I started to feel, wow, like going back to my abortion that I had a few years earlier and really dealing with the gravity of what I had done. And that that was a life, that was a human being, and that I had been lied to, that it was nothing.
So take, if you don't mind, I just think this is the most critical part of processing something that happened years earlier, a couple of years earlier. Obviously, you can't go back in time and erase that decision. It's done.
Yes.
You did it. But the presence now of a second pregnancy and a decision that you now are making on the basis of what you know in your own heart is the right thing, you're also then about ready to taste the grace of God from him in forgiveness. How did that go?
I think it got to a place of where I just realized that I needed to know that what I had done, that there, it wasn't this complete, like, you know, just unforgiveness, is, you know, this sin that would never be removed from me, the shame that would never leave me. I wanted to release that. I wanted to feel free of that. And so after I had my son, that's where I really got face to face and with God. And he kept pulling me in different ways with different people, bringing me to church, and got me to a place to be really quiet where I was reading my Bible every day and just studying the word and coming to know him for myself. And just the peace and the love and the grace that I was met with, where I thought I was going to be met with shame and condemnation. And God is, you know, growing up Catholic, God's angry with you. You got to pay for your sin. And, you know, there's, you know, all this guilt and shame into being a child of God, you know, because he's always angry, right? You know, but that wasn't the case.
That wasn't the case. And that is such a beautiful thing, to come face to face with the grace of God, the forgiveness of God. And I think, you know, I think of all the people that we read about in the Bible, people like Paul, who, you know, was giving assent to a murder with Stephen. And he's right there. And yet the grace of God so changed his life. And he's still in that business. He's changing our lives.
Yeah.
He's giving us grace. Yeah. Oh, that was the testimony of Michelle Sonny. Michelle, you know, you made that decision. You basically now have a child on the way. And so finish telling that story. How did that whole birth end up happening and all of that?
With my son?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, well, I had my son when I came to know Christ, my son was already born.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was the best, by far the best decision I made, because not only did I experience this great love to be a mom that I didn't know was so beautiful and mm-hmm. so amazing, and that I was even worthy of that, you know, after my abortion that I had years prior, now feeling that love, you know, that God gave me and a child that, you know, I'm responsible for and to care for, and that just beautiful joy. And that again was God drawing me. I saw how, looking back now, God was just completely showing me his love and his grace and drawing me closer to him in these little glimpses of letting me become a mom and watching my family come around me to support me. And we're just so grateful that I, even though I was a single mom and it wasn't the way that they had planned for me, they were so supportive and just so happy. And they adore my son, I think, sometimes more than me.
Of course. Grandkids are grand. That's
grandkids
right.
Grandkids are grand, yes. And so shortly after I had my son, that's really where I got to a place of just being so grateful and wanting to know this God that had just loved me at my worst and still blessed me, still showed me his mercy and his grace.
Mm.
And I decided to give my life to him, to surrender my life to him and say, Lord, after all that I've done and you know every detail of my life, you know me inside and out, and you still love me like this. And I know now without a doubt that I can trust you, that you are not this angry, far, you know, God away from us, that you are close to us, even in our
beautiful,
even in our brokenness. And he definitely brought me to a place of restoration. And I had to go through a period of really, really just probably, I think I may have cried for, I don't know, maybe every day for a couple of months, really just once I really took hold of the weight of my abortion and now, you know, being in relationship with my father in the way that I was, it broke me in a way where I think he was just cleansing me of that and outpouring of this hurt and this shame that I carried for so long, and now releasing
it. Yeah. Michelle Sonny is one of our guests today. Michelle is the clinic director for downtown, for the location downtown of Choices. And in a moment, we're going to hear the story of our other guest, which is Christina Bishop. And she, too, is a director of the new location for Choices, which is over by UCF on the eastern part of Orange County of Orlando. And, you know, you guys are here just before a big event. And before we take a break, I'd love if you can give us the web address for how people can find out more information, because you've got this guest. Kevin Sorbo is going to become the guest there at this thing and speak. And I know people might even still be able to jump in. I don't know, is it too late to get tickets?
Not too late.
It's not too late.
No, it's not too late. You can go to choicesfriends.com and the information will be right there. As soon as you enter that web address, it pops right up. It's called Hope Lives Here.
Oh, and that's beautiful.
Yeah, you click on that and you'll get all the details of the event. It's going to be a great night.
It is going to be a great night on the night of the 12th of October. And that is choicesfriends.com.
Correct.
We'll be back in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike. My guest today, Michelle Sonny, also Christina Bishop. And we'll be back in just a moment. Back here in the studio with me today, a couple of guests. I've been talking to Michelle Sonny, clinic director from Choices, and that is in the downtown area. Recently, and Brittany and I both had an opportunity to go out, be part of the grand opening of Choices in their new location, and that was over by UCF. And that is a beautiful building. Actually, they share the space there with one corner of it with Advent Health as well. And that was pretty cool. But now we have the director of that location also in the studio with us. Welcome to Christina Bishop. Thank you for being here.
Yes, thank you for having me.
You know, it's really great to get to talk to you and to find out your story as well. Michelle was telling us all about how she kind of came into her relationship with the Lord and this organization of, or I should say, the bigger picture of life and believing for life. Now she gets to work at it, as do you. Tell us your story. Were you from this area as well?
No, not originally. I was born in Michigan, but my family moved here when I was about 5 years old. So I'm kind of a Floridian.
Yeah.
a little bit-ish.
Yeah. You probably have a few remembrances of up north.
It's cold. It's cold, and I like the sunshine.
So, yeah, I like it a lot better here. What part of Michigan did they come down from?
The Lansing area.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Not that I really have been in Lansing a lot, but I have a... I'm a Hoosier, so I was born in Indiana, just south of there.
Yes.
And so once or twice we were up in the Michigan area, and it is cold. Evansville, where I'm from, was plenty cold. And when my wife and I moved here, we decided that, yeah, this is kind of this is where we want to be. Don't have to deal with snow and ice anymore.
That's right.
Did you grow up in a church family?
I did not. No, I was not raised in church. My family was not a family of believers. No.
So how did you come to know the Lord how old were you?
I was in my 20s. Actually, I had always believed that there was a God. And I guess if I would have been asked, I would have told people that I was a Christian, because we put up a Christmas tree and we would go sit on Santa Claus's lap and visit the Easter bunny. And I knew that somehow associated with this guy Jesus on a cross. But that was about the extent.
Now,
I've heard
too many people relate those things right there
right.
to the cross. But that's interesting.
Right. But that was really it. So I would have assumed that I was a Christian.
Yeah.
But I hadn't really been to church or anything like that. So when I was in my early 20s, actually, it was on 9/11. On 9/11 and that day, my sister had already started attending a church, and the church she was going to here locally was having sort of an emergency prayer and worship service. And she invited me to come. And I remember
9/11, 2001.
Mm-hmm. And I remember I was so afraid that day. The sky was literally falling. I remember overnight just kind of what had happened. And so, in that moment, and just there was just panic everywhere. And I was scared. And she invited me to go to her church service. So I went with her. And I went and I liked what I saw. And over time, I just started to go. And then I would go a little bit more consistently. And after going to church for a few years, I eventually raised my hand and accepted Jesus as mm-hmm. my Savior. Yeah.
So you were going to church, attending church for a couple of years mm-hmm. before making that commitment in your own heart.
Yes, that's correct. I didn't quite understand that you needed to do that. And I wasn't quite sure really that I belonged or what it all meant. I liked it. I liked how I felt when I went, but mm-hmm. I didn't own a Bible. I didn't have any spiritual disciplines. I just knew that I liked it. And I remember the pastor, sort of doing that altar call and sitting in my seat and calling, you know, if you want to come forward. And I just began to cry because I had been going for 2 years and I was afraid that there were people around me that had seen me coming for a few years and I hadn't gone forward before. And I didn't want them to know that I wasn't already a part of what they believed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I didn't get out of my chair and I just began to cry. And he paused, and there were people going up all over the place. So there would have been no reason for me to be afraid. I wasn't the only person. But at the very end, he said, you know, there's somebody still out there that you're afraid to get out of your seat, and it's okay. You can say it from your chair. And I knew that was my moment.
Mm.
I knew that was my moment to say that prayer.
Mm-hmm. And what changes did you feel in your heart immediately?
I knew that I kind of belonged to something, and I felt like I could. I just felt like I could belong to something. I had never really belonged or felt like I belonged anywhere. But it would actually be more than a decade, probably 12 or 13 years, that I would continue to go consistently. I started to teach Sunday school and get involved before I truly, for myself, began the healing process and accepted and surrendered my life to Christ.
Mm-hmm.
And really acknowledged that I needed his forgiveness and was able to accept it for myself. So
mm-hmm.
I walked around sort of saved without the realization and the acceptance of his love. now, for a long time.
What was it about this this direction that you've gone in as a believer now, that where you're working for choices, that drew you to that? Have you been a person that really carried the thought of pro-life for a long time?
Yes. So I have a similar story to Michelle. As a teenager, I also experienced an unplanned pregnancy and had an abortion. I was very young, and my parents told me, "You're having an abortion." And I didn't really even know what an abortion was. I'd never heard of it before. I didn't quite get it. And so I had an abortion, and I think they were trying to do what they thought was best for me as such a young girl, which I don't hold that, you know, on them. But so I had this abortion, and
that was in Central Florida as well.
Yes. Yes. That was back in the early 90s, like 1993. So I was quite young, and then fast forward to about a year and a half later, I had another unplanned pregnancy, and that time experienced a miscarriage. So I didn't tell my parents at the time. I didn't really, again, know what was happening, but then I recognized what had happened. I had had a miscarriage.
And I think a lot of people that are listeners who have not been touched, let's say their relatives, they would probably not realize how often the stories that both of you ladies have experienced, how often this happens in our culture. But it's a very regular occurrence.
Very regular. We see a lot of patients in their early and mid-teens, you know, still in high school age. So it's very common.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I don't know how often it would be that the parents would be as intricately involved as what yours were. But later on, I'm sure that had to be an interesting discussion with them long after the fact. Did you, did they come around to where they regretted that counsel?
I don't know the answer to that. They've never really expressed that. And I haven't asked. It hasn't been a huge topic of conversation. Again, similar to Michelle, you know, after I had the abortion, I didn't know, you know, nobody talked about it. It just became, we just moved on with life. And so I don't really know the answer to that, if they had some regrets there or not.
So tell me a little bit about your life then when you had that second miscarriage and now it's over. What started happening in your heart then?
Well, I was in a really dark place, and there was substance abuse in my home growing up. There was a lot of other things taking place. So I was really, really very lost and just in kind of a shell of a teenager, shell of a person. I didn't have any sense of self-worth or you know, any sort of sense of love or anything like that. I didn't really know what love was. And so I, you know, I did have a lot going on, but I was very focused on my friends and dating and doing things that teenagers really shouldn't be doing.
Yeah.
Clearly. And so, you know, but I was kind of in my own sort of world there, I guess you could say that.
And there's a couple of years there between that kind of thing and then 2001, when you actually had your first experience in a church where you started feeling apart.
Yeah. Well, and so kind of after the second pregnancy and having a miscarriage, I then, you know, finished high school, graduated, and then found myself at 19 pregnant again for the third time in my teens. And that time I chose life. And so in December of 99, I had a little girl.
Oh, my
and
goodness. Yes, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's wonderful.
So but that's a lot for a teenager to experience before they hit 20. And so, again, I was a young mom. Her dad and I were together at the time and stayed together for some time there. So he was involved in her life. And, you know, we were able to raise her for the most part, for most of our, you know, her upbringing together.
Okay.
And it was in 2001, again, like I said, with 9/11, that I, you know, started to recognize God's pursuit of me.
Now, these are stories. Both Michelle and Christina's story are, again, very common, sadly, much more common than what we would like to think in our culture. But the other side of it is that when you have these kind of life experiences, as both of you have had, they really do. There's a silver lining involved in this because of the fact that you've both met the grace of God, you've both met with the Lord, and you've both tasted of His forgiveness. And then you have this, what I consider to be an amazing platform from which you are able to reach out and help untold other women who are in the same boat that you were.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's one thing that I recognize. And it was actually pointed out to me by my husband while we were dating. And he said, you know, before I fully knew your story, I knew there was more to your story because people don't cling to Jesus like you do unless they really know they need him. Mm-hmm. And that's very true, because part of that story, I've experienced his grace and his forgiveness, and I've done things that are so incredibly unthinkable, yet he loves me anyways. And so there is a relationship, a worship that I have, you know, towards Jesus or of Jesus, an adoration of him that I don't know as though I would have experienced had I've not been forgiven of some of the most offensive sins, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
You know, I think that a reality of where people are, I mean, again, neither of you and nor I, nor anyone listening can go back and just kind of like, with a undo button, like what we can do on a computer, we can't hit an undo button and go back and erase out decisions that were made, choices that were made that we regret, or things that we said that we'd like to have back. I mean, none of us can do that, but we can come to the Lord. And for people who are hearing this, and again, I it doesn't really matter whether this particular issue is what they've dealt with or not. What they're hearing in your story, both of you have faces that are smiling, beaming, joy-filled faces. Yeah. That is only possible in life when one has met with the Lord and one has tasted of that kind of grace and mercy that Jesus gives us. That's what I found to be true.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I lived in such darkness and had so much self-hatred and unworthiness and shame and just so much hurt and pain that I carried, and that I, you know, you would fake a laugh or fake a smile and wear a mask often, you know, just to get through the mm-hmm. days. So you're absolutely right. There is such an incredible grace and goodness of God that I've experienced that has totally changed my life. So yeah.
How did you first hear about Choices, Vicky, and the people over there?
Well, it's a wild story that this program probably doesn't have time for, but I'll give you the shortened version. There is a woman I'm friends with who invited me to come with her. She was making a donation towards the building project and said, I'm meeting with the executive director. You know, would you like to come with me when I give this donation and pray? Now, this friend did not know my story. She did not know that I'm post-abortive. And, you know, it's not something that you just talk about regularly. But she knows I love to pray. And so I said, yes, I do that. And so I joined her to go while she gave Vicky that donation and to pray. And Vicky and I began to talk and share stories. And I had just left the workplace a few months prior to fulfill my lifelong dream of being a housewife and stay-at-home mom. And when I got there and meeting with her, she kind of looked at me and she said, I think you're supposed to work here. And I said, no, I came here to pray. And she said, well, you did that, but I think you're supposed to work here. I want you to pray about that.
Vicky has her ways.
And she somehow gets her way. She has her way and she gets her way. So at the end of that, we spent some time together, you know, probably an hour and a half, 2 hours that I was there. At the end, she said, no, really, I think you're my clinic director. And I want you to pray about it. And, you know, can you come and meet with me at the other clinic location? And that was it. So the rest was history. I went home and I told my husband but what had happened, and he just looked at me and he said, do you realize what favor you have on your life? You show up somewhere to pray and they're like, I think you're my director.
That is funny.
It is. And really, that was just the start of this incredible journey and the privilege that I have to serve at Choices. So,
well, this is so exciting to hear about this new thing. And again, Brittany Parks, who was our director of development, and I both were invited by Vicky to come out and be a part of that big day. And wow, that was a packed out parking lot there at your place that day. And we were all standing out, and you folks that were on the porch. I felt bad because the sun was just, I mean, it felt like it had to be just gleaming right down on you right there. It was a hot afternoon, but people were so excited to kind of cut the ribbon and get this thing underway. It is a beautiful facility, and you guys have been in it now, what, for about 2 months or so, 3 months?
Just about three. Yeah, we opened June 21st. So, so just over 3 months.
Just over 3 months, and it is not very far at all from the UCF campus, and that is strategic because, again, of just the sheer reality of what both of you have talked about, that a lot of young people find when they're in the college years, that they find themselves pregnant when they weren't expecting to be pregnant. And I don't know why that is, that people are as surprised after they are, but that nevertheless is the truth, that people think that this is not going to touch me, but yet it does. And then when it does, the sobering reality of the depth of responsibility on that is now suddenly weighing on you is there. And I just think it's brilliant that this group, you've named your company Choices. That is a great word because it is a word that is used by the other side so often, but they don't really mean it. There's only one choice if you have that. And I love the choice that you guys give your clients. And it's a wonderful thing. We're going to hear more about the Choices organization, again, about this big fundraising banquet that's coming up in a moment. My guest today, Michelle Sawney from downtown and Christina Bishop from the UCF Clinic, all of Choices. We'll be right back. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd. It is an honor to have a couple of the clinic directors with Choices. That's a great organization in Central Florida, not unlike CIRA up in Gainesville. This organization is led by the executive director, Vicki Matthews, who have been on my program a number of times. And we were the just privileged guests of Choices at the recent, about 3 months ago, the grand opening of their new clinic, which is over by UCF. And I'm talking here to Christina Bishop from that particular clinic, also Michelle Sawney, and she is the director of the downtown clinic, which has been around for how long, Michelle?
Well, the downtown clinic has been around for a little over 4 years.
4 years.
Yes, that clinic opened up in 2017.
Now, I know that Vicki, her story is so interesting, how it was that she came and just, you mentioned something a moment ago, Christina, that I really loved in our break. During the break, you were talking about favor, or maybe it was your husband was talking about the favor of God that's on your life. And that's one thing that in my short time of knowing Vicki and being aware of Choices, it just appears that there's a lot of favor in the community on this organization.
Absolutely.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We've been around for over 35 years. We're one of the oldest pregnancy centers in Central Florida. And I believe that God has had his hand on that ministry ever since, or this ministry, I should say, ever since. And just seen the growth that has happened, especially in the last, 5 to 6 years with Vicki coming on board and just really taking the organization to that next level of just reaching more women and the women that are considering abortion at that.
Now, I met a couple when I was there and I was able to do a bunch of interviews at the grand opening. I believe their names were Tom and Karen. Is that right?
Yes.
And they were some of the original board members, the original founders of Choices. And what a thrill that was to get to talk to them and get their perspective.
Yes, they're phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah.
So when you guys look, you're both involved now on a day-to-day basis. Christina, you didn't think you were going to be on the workforce quite in the same way that you are right now, and you're back out there. You guys are seeing things in real time every day of your lives that not only represent the problems that your clients deal with personally, but those are representative of bigger issues in our culture, bigger issues in America, things that are being talked about, things that are being fought over in not only clinics, but in courts around the country, and talk almost every day. There's hardly a news cycle that goes by without the word abortion coming up or Planned Parenthood or something relating to this issue. What is it like for, and we can start with either one of you, but what is it like working in a clinic with that kind of pressure, if you will, in the air?
Well, I think as far as thinking about pressure in the air, we're there to stay focused. And sometimes the best thing we can do is to try to remove that pressure by saying we're here for each and every patient. The woman that is in front of me matters. Her life matters. Her story matters. And, you know, we're there for her specifically. And she is the focus. And I think that's probably one of the easiest ways to remove some of the political pressure surrounding the issue and try to understand what does she think? What is she feeling? Mm-hmm. Where is she at? What does she know or think she knows? And to try to identify, are there things that she believes about abortion that aren't true? Are there questions that she has concerning it? Is she concerned that we've had a patient who was concerned that I got to hurry up and do this before there's a heartbeat because then I can't have an abortion here, right? And so there's a lot of confusion out there, and there are different states with different laws and different requirements. And so, again, it's just focusing on that one patient and giving all of our attention to her in that moment.
Mm-hmm. Michelle, do you find that people come in almost doing what was just mentioned here, by Christina, where they think there's a heartbeat law right now? And as far as I know, in the state of Florida, so far there's not such a law like that, like what the Texas law is. But people are walking in your doors thinking that you're going to maybe even get an abortion now.
Yes, I think to just, you know, go to continue with what Christina was saying, I think the biggest common theme that I hear and we hear every day is truth. You know, these women, they want truth. They want to know exactly what is going on with their bodies, exactly what their options are. And I think of no better individuals to give them that than believers and mm-hmm. for Christians, because there is no deception in what we do. And so many of the women do come in thinking that we may provide that abortion service to them. We can tell them where to go have that abortion. But there is no deception in how they come to us. And when they come to us, we give them that truth.
Mm-hmm.
And we share with them what their options look like and answer their questions, you know, honestly, and from a medically professional standpoint on what abortion is, what pregnancy is, and then also the support that they can get.
I'm sure you've seen it before where someone walks in thinking they're going to get an abortion. Yes. And then they choose not to get an abortion. So how quickly has that cycle ever turned around where they think they're going to and then, boom, they're not? Does that happen in one meeting or more than one meeting?
It happens in the first appointment. So when they come in, you know, thinking that they're going to have an abortion, they are told by that advocate or that medical professional they meet with that day in that appointment that they're not going to have that abortion, that we're not going to provide that to them. But they are then met with the services that we do provide and why those services are necessary. And that turnaround can be almost within that same appointment where they come in wanting an abortion and leave now saying that they're going to keep their baby based on the information that's provided during that appointment.
Now, does it ever happen where they walk out mad? And
yes, that does happen.
Yeah, I bet it does.
Not as often as I think people think it does. Again, because of the way that we love these women and the way that they're met when they come to our clinic with the respect and mm-hmm. the professionalism and the compassion. So you always are going to have those few that are very determined to have that abortion and that are very angry or in very hard situations. And yes, they may leave angry, but mm-hmm. I would say a majority of the women that come into our clinic thinking that they're going to have an abortion, they stay for that entire appointment and they hear and they listen and receive the information that we provide to them that day.
Now, I know both of you have talked about the fact that when you saw your own child or when you heard the heartbeat or you see an ultrasound, this thing about an ultrasound really does matter, doesn't it? I mean, I've heard great statistics about women who've been considering ending the life of their child. When they see an ultrasound, that changes things.
it can absolutely be the biggest game changer for a lot of these women, you know, to see something. You can't deny what you see. And it's hard to forget what you see. You take it in. And to see even as early as 5 weeks, 5 days, or 5 weeks, 6 days, there's already a heartbeat. And that is really only, you know, considering the from the first day of their last period. So they're really not that far along. And so very, very early, a heartbeat can be detected. And I think that is very gripping to a lot of women. They see that and they recognize, oh, it's just not a massive tissue like some would have you believe. And it's very quickly that development takes place in utero. And so in a short amount of time, there's arms and legs and, you know, so a lot can be seen and a lot of decisions change based on that ultrasound experience.
What would be some of the most, let's say, memorable counseling times you've had with one of your clients?
I think one of the most memorable ones for me was a patient that came in that was pretty advanced in her pregnancy. She was probably about 20 weeks, 21 weeks when she came in, and she was 18 years old and just graduated high school, and her mom was, you know, encouraging her to have an abortion and took her to the abortion clinic and left her there with some money and told her to take care of it. And we had one of our sidewalk counselors and great, great men of God, Mr. John Barrows, who stands outside of one of those abortion clinics here locally. And he encourages women to come and see us to get truth and to get, you know, great medical services and professional services. And he encouraged her to come over to us and brought her over to us. And we were able to meet her and take care of her. And she was actually preeclamptic. So we ended up having to encourage her to go to the hospital because of her symptoms. She had her high blood pressure, yeah, and, you know, going through.
And that can be very dangerous for her own life, too.
Yes.
You may well have saved her own life.
Yes. And it was shortly after that, about a few weeks after that, I would say 2 weeks, I think, after she came to our clinic, she ended up having her son and gave birth to her son. And he was in the NICU for a few months and survived. And so I think that was such a huge impact on me. And even on the patient, because she didn't realize that, you know, just 2 weeks prior to that, she was going to be considering having an abortion. And then here 2 weeks later, now she's holding her little baby boy in her arms, and he's strong, and he fought and, you know, survived all of that. So I think that was one of the most impactful appointments and patient situations that I incurred so far.
Well, I tell you, it's a very encouraging thing for me to hear these stories and to see the work that Choices does on a day in and day out basis. And for those that are listening, if you're hearing this story about heartbeat and the impact of a mom hearing the heartbeat, there's a movement underfoot. If I can just take a moment and tell you all about it, if you haven't heard, it's called the Human Life Protection Amendment, and you can go to this website and see a 90-second video. Only takes a minute and a half. Go to heartbeathero.org, heartbeathero.org, and Florida has an opportunity. This is a very real opportunity for us to have something in our state that would be something very similar to the Texas law that has been recently given that could actually change some things. Now, this is not being done through legislation. This is being done through a citizen initiative. But people can sign a petition and get this thing on the ballot. And if it goes on the ballot, then it will be elected on in the midterms next year. It will, and we might see a heartbeat bill that is very effective, that not only protects the unborn, but protects those at the end of life as well, in all stages of vulnerability in life. So that's what that's about. So I know that that's something that people, our listeners, can be a part of. Choices has this big event coming up on the 12th. Give us the details, if you will, one more time on that.
Sure. So it is our annual benefit dinner. And this year, our guest speaker is none other than Kevin Sorbo, Hercules, or if you're not familiar, if you haven't watched that from God's Not Dead, if you've seen that movie,
right.
He's produced and starred in a lot of movies. So we're excited about that. It's going to be a beautiful event where you can get dressed up. Some of you all like to get dressed up and put your high heels on and have a beautiful dinner and hear what's going on in Choices. Over the last year, we're going to celebrate what God has done, and then we're going to also talk about what God is doing in the future. So there is still opportunity to sign up for that.
And give us the website one more time.
It is choicesfriends.com.
Choicesfriends.com. My guest today, Christina Bishop, who was just talking, clinic director at the UCF Clinic for Choices. Also, Michelle Sawney. She's the director of the Downtown Clinic, been around for about 4 years at that location. And I can't thank you both enough for being here with us and sharing your story. And I believe just giving us lots of new reason to have faith for what God's going to do in this whole movement in Central Florida. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
And friends, thanks for joining us today. We'll catch you next time right here on The Shepherd on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by U.S. Christian Chamber, National Conference, and Expo.